Cambridge International Examinations, International General Certificate of Secondary Education, November Examination Series 2017, English as a Second Language, Extended Tier, Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words or a number for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. When did the boy arrive home from his trip? B. What did the boy enjoy most about his trip?
Hi, have you just got back from Canada?
Yes, we were going to come back last Thursday, but the flight got cancelled, so we stayed on a few days. We got seats on the late Saturday flight and landed on Sunday. It was a long flight, I tell you.
Yeah, I can't stand long flights. But how was the trip?
It was amazing. I didn't expect that the waterfalls would turn out to be the highlight of the trip. I was also looking forward to going to the coast, but it rained when we were there. Anyway, you have to see the photos.
Great, can't wait. Hi, have you just got back from Canada?
Yes, we were going to come back last Thursday, but the flight got cancelled, so we stayed on a few days. We got seats on the late Saturday flight and landed on Sunday. It was a long flight, I tell you.
Yeah, I can't stand long flights. But how was the trip?
It was amazing. I didn't expect that the waterfalls would turn out to be the highlight of the trip. I was also looking forward to going to the coast, but it rained when we were there. Anyway, you have to see the photos.
Great, can't wait.
Question 2. A. What is the new film about? B. When will the film be released for the general public?
Have you had enough of films with predictable endings? Fed up with movies about romance or endless car chases? Then you have to see Sweet Chestnut, the latest movie by James Crane about two sisters. It's a heartwarming story which will stay with you for several days. We can promise you, you won't be disappointed. You can catch it in a cinema near you from December the 14th. There is an advance screening, though, on the 11th of December for the few lucky winners of our competition. If you want to find out more about how to win these special tickets, stay tuned for further details. Have you had enough of films with predictable endings? Fed up with movies about romance or endless car chases? Then you have to see Sweet Chestnut, the latest movie by James Crane about two sisters. It's a heartwarming story which will stay with you for several days. We can promise you, you won't be disappointed. You can catch it in a cinema near you from December the 14th. There is an advance screening, though, on the 11th of December for the few lucky winners of our competition. If you want to find out more about how to win these special tickets, stay tuned for further details.
Question 3. A. What has the girl lost? B. Where has the girl just come from?
Here's the bus. Let's go.
Wait, Dad, I can't find my...
What have you lost this time? I hope it's not your new tablet.
It's okay. I've got that here in my backpack. It's my smartphone. I thought I'd put it in there too.
Well, think. When did you last use it?
I'm pretty sure I had it in the cafe. I've got a feeling I must have put it down in the information centre when we were looking through those maps.
Well, we'd better go and check, hadn't we? Here's the bus. Let's go.
Wait, Dad, I can't find my...
What have you lost this time? I hope it's not your new tablet.
It's okay. I've got that here in my backpack. It's my smartphone. I thought I'd put it in there too.
Well, think. When did you last use it?
I'm pretty sure I had it in the cafe. I've got a feeling I must have put it down in the information centre when we were looking through those maps.
Well, we'd better go and check, hadn't we?
Question 4. A. What does the man order? B. What is the man unhappy about?
Have you looked at our dessert menu yet, sir? We've got some nice things to choose from.
Yes, I'll have the cherry pancake, please.
Oh, sorry. We've just served the last one. How about our lemon tart or chocolate cake? They're both very popular.
The first one sounds good. I'll have that, thank you. Before you go, I wonder if it would be possible to...
Ah, is it the air conditioning?
Actually, it's the loud music. Could you turn it down, please?
Have you looked at our dessert menu yet, sir? We've got some nice things to choose from.
Yes, I'll have the cherry pancake, please.
Oh, sorry. We've just served the last one. How about our lemon tart or chocolate cake? They're both very popular.
The first one sounds good. I'll have that, thank you. Before you go, I wonder if it would be possible to...
Ah, is it the air conditioning?
Actually, it's the loud music. Could you turn it down, please?
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a scientist giving a talk about birds called puffins. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Over half of the world's population of puffins are found in Iceland. Many of you may be familiar with the fact that puffins are easily recognisable thanks to their brightly coloured beaks. Adult puffins use their beaks to attract each other's attention and find a partner, which they do while they're out at sea, and actually remain together until they die. Puffins come onto land to breed. Each year, they build a nest in a tunnel in a cliff between April and August, which is the breeding season. They often return to the same tunnel over several years, but replace their nest. They normally lay just one egg in their nest. Both parents take it in turns to guard the egg for approximately 40 days before the baby chick is finally ready to be born. The chick spends about 45 days in the nest until it's fit to fly. However, adult puffins usually leave the nest a few days before their chick's first flight. Puffins spend most of the year out at sea and are well equipped for this with their waterproof feathers to protect them. They're excellent divers and can reach a depth of 60 metres using their wings to push themselves forward and dive deeper. They mostly rely on their feet to steer themselves when attempting to catch fish. Puffins can carry several fish back to their nest at a time. The average catch is 10 fish per trip. They mostly eat small fish, such as sand eels and herring. And throughout the winter, they also eat shellfish when their preferred food is in short supply. Every August, millions of baby puffins leave their nests for the first time. They head off to the ocean without their parents, so they have nothing to guide them except the moon. Unfortunately, streetlights in more urban areas of Iceland can confuse these young birds and cause them to fly straight into towns instead of landing out at sea. They remain in the open ocean until they're 2 to 3 years old. Scientists believe that puffins make what's known as a mental map of the area where they were born so that they can return to it in order to nest. Puffins are not registered as endangered at the moment, but some colonies have been decreasing due to a variety of threats. They commonly get trapped in nets that are used by fishermen. Another danger is oil, which can damage their feathers and cause them to die. They also have several natural enemies, both in the sea and on land. Although puffins are probably safest when they're in water, seals have been known to attack them. When puffins are on land, they have to watch out for other mammals such as rats and foxes. Despite the setbacks, puffins in some areas have been increasing steadily over recent years, and there is still a great deal to find out about these fascinating birds.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Over half of the world's population of puffins are found in Iceland. Many of you may be familiar with the fact that puffins are easily recognisable thanks to their brightly coloured beaks. Adult puffins use their beaks to attract each other's attention and find a partner, which they do while they're out at sea, and actually remain together until they die. Puffins come onto land to breed. Each year, they build a nest in a tunnel in a cliff between April and August, which is the breeding season. They often return to the same tunnel over several years, but replace their nest. They normally lay just one egg in their nest. Both parents take it in turns to guard the egg for approximately 40 days before the baby chick is finally ready to be born. The chick spends about 45 days in the nest until it's fit to fly. However, adult puffins usually leave the nest a few days before their chick's first flight. Puffins spend most of the year out at sea and are well equipped for this with their waterproof feathers to protect them. They're excellent divers and can reach a depth of 60 metres using their wings to push themselves forward and dive deeper. They mostly rely on their feet to steer themselves when attempting to catch fish. Puffins can carry several fish back to their nest at a time. The average catch is 10 fish per trip. They mostly eat small fish, such as sand eels and herring. And throughout the winter, they also eat shellfish when their preferred food is in short supply. Every August, millions of baby puffins leave their nests for the first time. They head off to the ocean without their parents, so they have nothing to guide them except the moon. Unfortunately, streetlights in more urban areas of Iceland can confuse these young birds and cause them to fly straight into towns instead of landing out at sea. They remain in the open ocean until they're 2 to 3 years old. Scientists believe that puffins make what's known as a mental map of the area where they were born so that they can return to it in order to nest. Puffins are not registered as endangered at the moment, but some colonies have been decreasing due to a variety of threats. They commonly get trapped in nets that are used by fishermen. Another danger is oil, which can damage their feathers and cause them to die. They also have several natural enemies, both in the sea and on land. Although puffins are probably safest when they're in water, seals have been known to attack them. When puffins are on land, they have to watch out for other mammals such as rats and foxes. Despite the setbacks, puffins in some areas have been increasing steadily over recent years, and there is still a great deal to find out about these fascinating birds.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 students talking about the work they did during the summer holiday. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
My uncle owns a shop and is starting to feel tired working such long hours, so he asked me to help him by sometimes opening the shop first thing in the morning. I'm not keen on getting up early, but I don't mind in the summer. Then I spent the rest of the day serving customers. They asked lots of questions. I can't say I particularly liked that part of the job, and it was a challenge for me. But I managed to overcome my nerves after a while and learnt to believe in myself more.
Speaker 2.
Our school offers summer courses for younger students who have fallen behind in their studies. I'm good at languages and was thinking of becoming an interpreter after university. So I volunteered to assist on these courses. This involved early starts, which wasn't always popular with the students, but it didn't bother me. I helped them with their French and got really good feedback. It was satisfying to know that I could help people, and it made me realise that teaching was the career path for me.
Speaker 3.
Most of my friends got a part-time job last summer and were excited about the experience. That's why this summer I thought I'd give it a go as well and got a job at the City Museum. I mostly worked at the information desk, giving tips to visitors. I really loved the fact that the staff there had confidence in me, and I enjoy preparing new exhibitions with them. I also found out lots about local history, which I was able to make use of in my last history essay.
Speaker 4.
I made up my mind years ago that I wanted to be a doctor, but my parents weren't sure that I really knew what the job would involve. So this summer, to prove that medicine is the right choice for me and to gain some invaluable experience, I volunteered to help in my local hospital. I enjoyed the time I spent there, but I must say I'd hoped they'd let me do more things apart from chatting to patients and serving them cups of tea.
Speaker 5. Last summer, I had a part-time job in a local company. I spent a few weeks answering the phone and doing various administrative tasks. There was quite a lot to take in, especially at the start, and I certainly wouldn't have managed without some of the staff. They had a lot to do themselves, so I really appreciated their support. Towards the end, I was asked if I'd like to take on extra responsibility and to show important visitors around the company while the permanent staff got on with their work. Speaker 6.
My friends and I have always dreamed of setting up a band and wanted to buy the latest sound system. We didn't want any help from our parents, so we decided to do some work on a farm to earn some cash. We helped in stables and also in the fields. It was really demanding, so I appreciated what I earned even more. I now have great respect for people working on farms. They get up so early in the morning and work hard till the evening.
Now you will hear the 6 speakers again. Speaker 1.
My uncle owns a shop and is starting to feel tired working such long hours, so he asked me to help him by sometimes opening the shop first thing in the morning. I'm not keen on getting up early, but I don't mind in the summer. Then I spent the rest of the day serving customers. They asked lots of questions. I can't say I particularly liked that part of the job, and it was a challenge for me, but I managed to overcome my nerves after a while and learnt to believe in myself more.
Speaker 2.
Our school offers summer courses for younger students who have fallen behind in their studies. I'm good at languages and was thinking of becoming an interpreter after university, so I volunteered to assist on these courses. This involved early starts, which wasn't always popular with the students, but it didn't bother me. I helped them with their French and got really good feedback. It was satisfying to know that I could help people, and it made me realise that teaching was the career path for me.
Speaker 3.
Most of my friends got a part-time job last summer and were excited about the experience. That's why this summer I thought I'd give it a go as well and got a job at the City Museum. I mostly worked at the information desk, giving tips to visitors. I really loved the fact that the staff there had confidence in me, and I enjoyed preparing new exhibitions with them. I also found out lots about local history, which I was able to make use of in my last history essay.
Speaker 4.
I made up my mind years ago that I wanted to be a doctor, but my parents weren't sure that I really knew what the job would involve. So this summer, to prove that medicine is the right choice for me and to gain some invaluable experience, I volunteered to help in my local hospital. I enjoyed the time I spent there, but I must say I'd hoped they'd let me do more things apart from chatting to patients and serving them cups of tea.
Speaker 5. Last summer, I had a part-time job in a local company. I spent a few weeks answering the phone and doing various administrative tasks. There was quite a lot to take in, especially at the start, and I certainly wouldn't have managed without some of the staff. They had a lot to do themselves, so I really appreciated their support. Towards the end, I was asked if I'd like to take on extra responsibility and to show important visitors around the company while the permanent staff got on with their work. Speaker 6.
My friends and I have always dreamed of setting up a band and wanted to buy the latest sound system. We didn't want any help from our parents, so we decided to do some work on a farm to earn some cash. We helped in stables and also in the fields. It was really demanding, so I appreciated what I earned even more. I now have great respect for people working on farms. They get up so early in the morning and work hard till the evening.
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear a radio presenter talking to Vincent Picard, a young chef who has won a competition. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Today I'm talking to Vincent Picard, winner of Young Business Person of the Year competition. Vincent, you now own 3 restaurants and you opened your first one at the age of 21. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I love eating out and trying new dishes. I'm told that I'm difficult to please when I go to other restaurants, and it's true. My friends challenged me to set up my own place to show how it should be done, but I'm stubborn and don't listen to others. It all came down to having a good idea at the right time. That was when I moved house and noticed I had to drive a long way to find anywhere to eat.
I guess you have to know a bit about food and cooking.
That's right, and I'm lucky because a love of cooking runs in our family. When my brother and I were little, our uncle insisted on cooking for us every weekend. We'd often spend time in the kitchen with him, so it comes as no surprise that we're both passionate about cooking too. Apparently, my grandfather taught all his children how to cook.
Did your love of cooking affect your choices at school?
As I said, I'm quite stubborn. When my parents wanted me to become a chef, I went against their wishes and focused on science. For ages, it felt like the right choice, as I'd hoped to go into research. Owning a restaurant business only crossed my mind after I graduated.
So when you opened your first restaurant, it must have been quite difficult.
Well, I had a solid business plan with realistic expectations. What I couldn't keep up with was the amount of day-to-day administration that was needed, like filling out delivery forms. Dealing with unhappy customers isn't something I've ever been particularly bothered by. Actually, I'd expected that taking care of my employees would have been the most demanding task.
I hear your customers love the choice of dishes in your restaurants.
Well, I do my best. At first, I tried researching traditional recipes for ideas. But you don't want to put something on the menu that takes a long time to prepare, which is often the case with these recipes. The key is listening to feedback from our happy diners, unlike chefs in other restaurants who think they can borrow ideas from each other. Then you end up with identical menus in most restaurants.
Do you ever get any free time?
Frankly, at the beginning, you have to devote your entire life to the business. I even had to give up my favourite pastime, riding my horses. You can start enjoying the benefits of your hard work when you know your business is well established. I enjoy photography, given the choice, I try to get to the cinema as often as I can, which is a great way of winding down.
I know you're always thinking ahead. Any new projects you can tell us about?
Everyone expects me to go for a fourth restaurant, and it's tempting. But I want to focus on the three I've already got. Anyway, I'm proud of where I come from, so I'd like to give something back to my community. At the moment, I'm talking to local schools about a project to help kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, and that's something I'd love to devote myself to. After my latest recipe book has come out, that is.
Sounds interesting. Unfortunately, there's only time for one last question. What would you say to young listeners who'd like to get into the restaurant business?
It's vital to bear in mind that there'll be problems on the way. But don't give up. If you're serious about your business, it's definitely worth it. Of course, gaining hands-on experience first is helpful to a certain extent. And understanding the business is something you learn along the way.
Thanks, Vincent.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Today I'm talking to Vincent Picard, winner of Young Business Person of the Year competition. Vincent, you now own three restaurants and you opened your first one at the age of 21. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I love eating out and trying new dishes. I'm told that I'm difficult to please when I go to other restaurants, and it's true. My friends challenged me to set up my own place, to show how it should be done. But I'm stubborn and don't listen to others. It all came down to having a good idea at the right time. That was when I moved house and noticed I had to drive a long way to find anywhere to eat.
I guess you have to know a bit about food and cooking.
That's right. And I'm lucky, because a love of cooking runs in our family. When my brother and I were little, our uncle insisted on cooking for us every weekend. We'd often spend time in the kitchen with him, so it comes as no surprise that we're both passionate about cooking too. Apparently, my grandfather taught all his children how to cook.
Did your love of cooking affect your choices at school?
As I said, I'm quite stubborn. When my parents wanted me to become a chef, I went against their wishes and focused on science. For ages, it felt like the right choice, as I'd hoped to go into research. Owning a restaurant business only crossed my mind after I graduated.
So when you opened your first restaurant, it must have been quite difficult.
Well, I had a solid business plan with realistic expectations. What I couldn't keep up with was the amount of day-to-day administration that was needed, like filling out delivery forms. Dealing with unhappy customers isn't something I've ever been particularly bothered by. Actually, I'd expected that taking care of my employees would have been the most demanding task.
I hear your customers love the choice of dishes in your restaurants.
Well, I do my best. At first, I tried researching traditional recipes for ideas. But you don't want to put something on the menu that takes a long time to prepare, which is often the case with these recipes. The key is listening to feedback from our happy diners, unlike chefs in other restaurants who think they can borrow ideas from each other. Then you end up with identical menus in most restaurants.
Do you ever get any free time?
Frankly, at the beginning, you have to devote your entire life to the business. I even had to give up my favourite pastime, riding my horses. You can start enjoying the benefits of your hard work when you know your business is well established. I enjoy photography, but given the choice, I try to get to the cinema as often as I can, which is a great way of winding down.
I know you're always thinking ahead. Any new projects you can tell us about?
Everyone expects me to go for a fourth restaurant, and it's tempting. But I want to focus on the three I've already got. Anyway, I'm proud of where I come from, so I'd like to give something back to my community. At the moment, I'm talking to local schools about a project to help kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, and that's something I'd love to devote myself to. After my latest recipe book has come out, that is.
Sounds interesting. Unfortunately, there's only time for one last question. What would you say to young listeners who'd like to get into the restaurant business?
It's vital to bear in mind that there'll be problems on the way. But don't give up. If you're serious about your business, it's definitely worth it. Of course, gaining hands-on experience first is helpful to a certain extent. And understanding the business is something you learn along the way.
Thanks, Vincent.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Part A. You will hear a teacher, Luke Collins, giving a talk to some students about silver. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
When it comes to precious metals, people tend to think about gold first and foremost. But today I want to tell you something about a precious metal that is more common and one that is certainly expensive and considered to be highly attractive. I'm talking about silver. Silver has a number of interesting qualities that make it distinctive. First of all, it is quite soft compared to many other metals, such as gold, and so melting it or cutting it with powerful tools is unnecessary. Pressing this beautiful metal into a variety of different forms can be done without much difficulty and at room temperatures. In fact, silver can even be transformed into an extremely thin wire, a wire that is actually less thick than a human hair. And remember, all this work with silver can be done because the metal is only as hard as a fingernail. Another distinctive characteristic of silver is its brightness, and so it's hardly a surprise that it's used in jewellery. One major difference from other metals is the fact that because contact with polluted air will stain silver and darken it, it must be polished to remain shiny. Many other metals remain dull, however much effort is made to remove dirt, but silver is different in this respect. Silver wasn't mined on a big scale until the discovery of extensive deposits in places like Bolivia and Mexico in the 16th century. Many hundreds of years earlier, a mine had in fact been opened in ancient Greece, but not much silver was produced. Unfortunately, the silver was often mixed up with lead, which is poisonous, so mining could be a dangerous activity. Silver was widely used in coins throughout history, though these were not necessarily pure silver and were often mixed with plenty of gold or copper. And many Europeans had plates and serving dishes made of silver for special occasions like weddings to demonstrate their status and power. From the 13th century onwards, it became more common to see things like spoons, which contained a much greater proportion of silver, although only the very well-off could afford to buy them. Are there any questions before I move on to consider some other interesting historical facts about silver?
Now you will hear the talk again.
When it comes to precious metals, people tend to think about gold first and foremost, But today I want to tell you something about a precious metal that is more common and one that is certainly expensive and considered to be highly attractive. I'm talking about silver. Silver has a number of interesting qualities that make it distinctive. First of all, it is quite soft compared to many other metals, such as gold, and so melting it or cutting it with powerful tools is unnecessary. Pressing this beautiful metal into a variety of different forms can be done without much difficulty and at room temperatures. In fact, silver can even be transformed into an extremely thin wire, a wire that is actually less thick than a human hair. And remember, all this work with silver can be done because the metal is only as hard as a fingernail. Another distinctive characteristic of silver is its brightness, and so it's hardly a surprise that it's used in jewellery. One major difference from other metals is the fact that because contact with polluted air will stain silver and darken it, it must be polished to remain shiny. Many other metals remain dull, however much effort is made to remove dirt, but silver is different in this respect. Silver wasn't mined on a big scale until the discovery of extensive deposits in places like Bolivia and Mexico in the 16th century. Many hundreds of years earlier, a mine had in fact been opened in ancient Greece, but not much silver was produced. Unfortunately, the silver was often mixed up with lead, which is poisonous, so mining could be a dangerous activity. Silver was widely used in coins throughout history, though these were not necessarily pure silver and were often mixed with plenty of gold or copper. And many Europeans had plates and serving dishes made of silver for special occasions like weddings to demonstrate their status and power. From the 13th century onwards, it became more common to see things like spoons, which contained a much greater proportion of silver, although only the very well-off could afford to buy them. Are there any questions before I move on to consider some other interesting historical facts about silver?
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about their research into the different uses of silver and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
That was an interesting talk on silver the other day, wasn't it? How are you getting on with your research for the assignment on silver?
I think it's going well. I had no idea just how important silver was in so many different areas of science and technology. The good thing about this assignment is that I'm constantly learning new things that I'd never realised before.
Me too. I mean, look at medicine. Did you know that manufacturers add compounds of silver in the production of bandages, plasters and medical dressings because it has the ability to attack bacteria? Although it doesn't work against larger organisms.
It's an amazing element, isn't it? It's everywhere in our daily lives. Even if you can't see it, it's inside computer keyboards and watch batteries, and of course dental fillings, which are silver-coloured. But again, they're a mixture of five different metals, and silver isn't the only thing used.
Another thing I found out is that minute traces of silver can help keep water clean. So it's very often something that is added to the water purification systems in hospitals. It fulfills a similar purpose in swimming pools occasionally, though more often than not something else is used.
Yes, you're right. I think they put in chlorine instead.
There are literally hundreds of applications for silver. Here's one you might not know about. It's frequently used to coat the glass on more than one sort of mirror.
It's funny you should mention mirrors. Because I'm going to put something in my assignment about the fact that there's an advanced telescope that contains a mirror that's coated with silver. And apparently it's also an important part of a solar panel.
You know what? I'm going to include a section about jewellery because I'm really interested in fashion and all kinds of accessories.
Yeah, silver jewellery's very popular.
But it's rarely 100% silver, of course. I found out about these various techniques involving silver. There's something called spluttering. That's adding a thin layer of silver to a window. Doing the same thing to a ring or a bracelet is called flashing.
Really? We're going to have plenty to write about. We'd better get started if we want to hand it in next week.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
That was an interesting talk on silver the other day, wasn't it? How are you getting on with your research for the assignment on silver?
I think it's going well. I had no idea just how important silver was in so many different areas of science and technology. The good thing about this assignment is that I'm constantly learning new things that I'd never realised before.
Me too. I mean, look at medicine. Did you know that manufacturers add compounds of silver in the production of bandages, plasters and medical dressings because it has the ability to attack bacteria? Although it doesn't work against larger organisms.
It's an amazing element, isn't it? It's everywhere in our daily lives. Even if you can't see it, it's inside computer keyboards and watch batteries and, of course, dental fillings, which are silver-coloured. But again, they're a mixture of five different metals, and silver isn't the only thing used.
Another thing I found out is that minute traces of silver can help keep water clean. So it's very often something that is added to the water purification systems in hospitals. It fulfills a similar purpose in swimming pools occasionally, though more often than not something else is used.
Yes, you're right. I think they put in chlorine instead.
There are literally hundreds of applications for silver. Here's one you might not know about. It's frequently used to coat the glass on more than one sort of mirror.
It's funny you should mention mirrors, because I'm going to put something in my assignment about the fact that there's an advanced telescope that contains a mirror that's coated with silver. And apparently it's also an important part of a solar panel.
You know what? I'm going to include a section about jewellery because I'm really interested in fashion and all kinds of accessories.
Yeah, silver jewellery's very popular.
But it's rarely 100% silver, of course. I found out about these various techniques involving silver. There's something called spluttering. That's adding a thin layer of silver to a window. Doing the same thing to a ring or a bracelet is called flashing.
Really? We're going to have plenty to write about. We'd better get started if we want to hand it in next week.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.